My name is Jean Lee Stadler, and this is my son, Brian Patrick Lee. He's named after...
Wait a minute. You're starting with the card.
I'm Jean Lee Stadler, age 87, born February 3rd, 1936. At the Waukesha Public Library.
Okay, I'm Brian Lee, age 61. Today is March 8th, 2023. We are at Waukesha, Wisconsin at the library, the Waukesha Library. I'm interviewing Jean Lee, my mother. So, Mom, thank you for joining me today.
Mm-hmm.
This is great. One thing, and we've been thinking about this for a while, but one thing that I've been thinking about, my name is spelled different. It's with an E, B-R-I-E-N. I always thought it was special. It made me feel good to be unique, have a unique name. I was 30 before I met somebody spelling Brian that same way. I'm curious how that came about. I knew that my great-grandfather was Patrick O'Brien, so I was named Brian Patrick with that spelling. How O'Brien is spelled with an E. But I never knew anything about Patrick O'Brien. My great-grandfather, I obviously never met him. So you were the keeper of the archives, and I think you still are. You had a chest full of photos, and I appreciate that. But you were... for a while there, you were into genealogy, so you were able to discover a lot about your grandfather, Patrick O'Brien.
Mm-hmm.
So what can you tell us about him?
Well, my grandfather, Patrick O'Brien, he died before I was born, but I have spent years researching the families, and I have a lot that I've learned about him, and especially about his father, who came from Ireland, who was John O'Brien. And there's a part of our history that was passed down through the years, because years ago there wasn't very good communication, you know, and they kind of assumed that when someone was captured in the Civil War and was taken to a southern prison, that it was Libby Prison. That was a well-known prison, I guess, and that wasn't true. So I was happy to find in the National Archives on one of my trips that it was Camp Ford in Tyler, Texas, where he was held as a prisoner. But anyway, John O'Brien, my great-great-grandfather, he came from Ireland and lived in Brooklyn, New York, married an Irish girl, and had three children. One of them was Brian... Patrick O'Brien. He was taken into the Civil War, and when he was captured and held in the southern prison, he died. But we found out that Camp Ford was a more humane kind of a prison, if there is such a thing. They were actually allowed to have their own newspaper. they would pass around a ragged paper to kind of be news and gossip and whatever, maybe joking around, who knows, they were trying to entertain themselves. And also, very interesting, the commander's wife was a very kind person, and she would bring in extra food and comfort items for the prisoners. But after a while, the camp became more crowded, so there was a lot more disease, and the comforts weren't too easy to come by. Let's see, what else can I tell you now?
You said he was taken into the Civil War. Was he drafted?
Yes.
And was he was fighting on the north, for the north?
For the north. He was drafted. As I understand it, if you had enough money, you could pay someone to go into the Civil War for you. That's what I was told. I don't know anything about that. And he was not able to do that, so he had to go. And that was very difficult to leave his wife and three children, well, two at the time. And then Patrick was born after he left.
Oh, really?
Yes.
You never met Patrick.
So, no.
From what I understand, there was not a lot of communication. When you first heard the story, you heard that he died in prison. So I guess to a young girl, you maybe thought that he was a criminal of some sort.
Oh, I was horrified. I was absolutely horrified. I was a little girl, and my mother just blurted out, "Oh, he died in Libby prison." And I thought, oh, my goodness, what a terrible man he must have been. And I just left the room.
What does that make me, the granddaughter of a criminal?
I don't know why she did that. She was more of a sensitive person than that. But I don't know why she would say such a thing. And she had no idea it had that effect on me. But, you know,
so,
we do dumb things.
When you did genealogy, and you did it for years, that was pretty much before the internet, wasn't it? Or was it the infancy of the internet? So you did a lot of your research at going to libraries.
Yes.
Looking through paper. You didn't just hop on the web and do that. You can see now. I mean, I think that was right around the time that it was beginning.
Yes,
So you were able to email people and stuff.
Yes, and I would visit with friends. Sorry. I'd go to libraries with friends. We'd have a good time, and we'd go use fiche to search records, at the Mormon Library and go to Minneapolis and all.
Were you able to make contact with any relatives in other countries? Your mother was one of eight kids. So there must be a lot of relatives around. Did you are you in contact with anybody now through email that you discovered you had this relative through your genealogy research?
We've always been close with all the eight of those parts of the family, and cousins and everybody, they've all kind of stayed in Wisconsin. And I'm just thinking, well, one lived in New York, and he was a lawyer. Well, he lived in New Jersey, I guess. He was a lawyer and a brilliant fellow. And he had lots and lots of time to go to the National Archives. And he could have found this information. So about John O'Brien, but I was a lucky one to find it about him being at the Camp Ford. And
there was something about Rockwell.
That's
about
it.
The mention of Rockwell.
That's it. There was a very wealthy man named Franklin Rockwell from Pennsylvania who looked after Patrick O'Brien after his dad passed away. He gave him jobs and then eventually took him in as a guardian, and he lived in his beautiful home in Pennsylvania for a time. And the Rockwell family often spent summers in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. And that, we think, is how Patrick got in to Wisconsin and met his bride, my grandmother, Emma, by being in Wisconsin.
She was Irish, too.
Yes, uh-huh.
So you mentioned, and that's a real interesting story, because obviously Rockwell International is a
yes,
huge company. Yes,
right.
Very successful.
Yes.
In Milwaukee.
Yes.
So you there are some Rockwells buried in LaBelle Cemetery.
And that's what I want to tell you.
That's where Dad is buried.
But just to backtrack, the name Rockwell was in one of the documents at the National Archives. There were tons and tons of John O'Briens in the Civil War, as you can imagine. You know, all these Irishmen were in the Civil War. And to go through one John O'Brien after another was mind-boggling. And all of a sudden, I see the name Rockwell on John O'Brien's papers, and I knew we had the right one. And so that was a very lucky break. So that was a nice connection there.
Yeah, you had several lucky breaks. One of your friends was like a genealogy expert.
Yes.
When you were into genealogy,
mm-hmm.
you were in it whole hog.
Right.
You loved it.
I went from one extreme to the other. I didn't want anything to do with any of that from little on. I just was so confused by all those relationships they would talk about, and I didn't have the patience to even listen, because I didn't meet these people, and they would say that uncle is related to that person, and
you couldn't make heads or tails of relationships, people that you may never even meet. Oh, you know, they're the second cousin once removed.
Oh, yeah.
It didn't make sense to you.
Went right over my head.
Once you saw that there was an actual way to make sense of things,
yeah.
you thought you would help your family out.
Right.
By to save them the same type
yes.
of confusion.
I wanted it on a nice, neat, large, nice-looking chart. And being an artist, I wanted to have a nice, maybe sketches of Ireland, maybe some scene along the edges, you know, and just...
So, oh, yeah, man. I love that.
I have to live about 20 more years to get all that done.
You went to Ireland.
Yes.
So you were trying to track down the hometown of John O'Brien.
Yes. That was
Were you able to do that?
No. All the records say he came from Ireland. The Irish, they didn't name towns. That is so difficult to find. It's very, very difficult.
So you went to Ireland hoping that you're going to find the town.
Right.
Did you get close, or did you have a good time?
It was wonderful. Ireland is fabulous and gorgeous and beautiful, and the people were wonderful. One experience,
and once they found,
his dad was just a clown and such a funny guy. Everybody adored him. He put on Irish brogue at one of the Irish pubs. And they put us in the back in a booth near two Irish widows. And we were there 2 seconds when the one widow put her arms around him and just hugged him because he was so lovable and with this funny brogue, and they were laughing at him. And it was just really sweet and funny. But anyway, we never could find the town. And his dad was a type A personality.
I want to interject one thing, and then you can do it. Don't forget it.
Okay.
I used to ride to work.
Oh, yeah.
And day after day after day, he would play that Danny Boy song.
Oh.
Until I got sick of it. But that was.
I didn't know that.
That's my story. I just wanted to throw it in there. Is that Danny Boy every day?
Yeah.
Man, it was crazy.
Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted.
I've lived my life with humor. Everything is so funny to me, and I'm funny. I'm crazy and funny. I'm losing my train of thought.
I knew you would. I interrupted you.
No, it's okay. It was about.
I can ask you another question. Think about that while you're answering.
Okay, I hope
totally
it comes back.
Unrelated question.
Yeah.
Now, you said you were an artist. Nick, your grandson,
yes,
is full of creativity.
Yes.
He's wondering if that's where he got it. Oh. I always thought he got it from Alyssa.
No.
But your brother was an artist. You're an artist.
Yeah.
I'm not an artist. But Nick is very creative.
Yeah.
How did that all come about? Was your parents artists?
Well, my father was, I wouldn't say artistic, but he was like an inventor. He actually invented what today is Thermo King refrigeration for trucks and trailers, which we sell in our business today. But he did not get the Thermo King name and company. Somebody did it before he was able to get the.
So Fred Jones.
Yeah, he was the one that really got the inventor.
Right.
But Dad had already.
The very first Thermo King dealer.
Yeah.
Your dad was the world's first Thermo King dealer.
Yeah.
And that was the infancy of transport refrigeration.
Right.
So we're talking, the 40s or?
I
mean, not the 40s, maybe the 50s or?
Yeah, could have been.
Somewhere around there.
Or 40s.
So that's all very.
Well, I remember what I was going to say.
Oh, good.
My husband, your dad, was a type A personality. Now we were in Ireland, and he would stop and patiently wait in the car while he would let me go into a museum or something. And I would enjoy it, and they'd have wonderful displays and everything, but no records or anything. And I would come out in about 20 minutes, and he'd say, "Did you find him?" Like it was that easy, you know. No, I didn't find them. It would take years and years and years of going to the archives, going to the New York Library, going all over the place. But these days you can find a lot on the internet. But we enjoyed those years
of
hard work.
And the travel is a lot easier when you do it on the internet.
Yes, but not as much fun.
Not as much fun, though. You don't meet as many people. So.
And when I went on one of the trips with friends, we went to St. Paul to a special place where they had records, and these two were like, well, I don't want to insult librarians, but I called them librarians because they were slim and kind of serious, I remembered there was this wonderful place to get pies, wonderful pies, on the way to Minneapolis. And I said, well, we're kind of hungry. Should we stop somewhere? And I thought, well, they'll never fall for this place. They'll never eat those pies. And I mentioned it, and they said, oh, that sounds good. Well, they both had two pieces of pie, and the pies are always about that tall, about 5 inches tall, with all the meringue and everything. So we just laughed so hard, you know.
I lost track of the story. The librarians were slim, but
these two girls that pies? The friends that were with me, they didn't seem to be the kind to eat like I ate in those days, you know.
Didn't you say something about librarians?
I called them librarians because they looked serious. Maybe librarians were serious in those days. I don't know why.
Okay,
I didn't know how to describe them.
I gotcha.
Okay, we're getting off track.
A little bit.
Yeah.
So I named, my wife and I, named our first son after my great-grandpa. So his name is spelled exactly the same as mine, Brian Patrick Lee. And so I guess I thought it was a good enough story to name my son after him.
Sure.
And now you're filling in the blanks. We actually know the guy now. So,
and he will enjoy it someday. He's so busy with kids now.
One thing I regret is I never talked to Dad much about his parents. His parents died young. I never met him. Never met him.
No.
And I never really, you know, I guess you don't know what's a sore subject. And heck, when I was younger, I wasn't really that curious. But obviously, years after he's gone now, I've got questions.
Sure.
What did you find out anything about his parents? Or you were married to him. You must have talked about his parents.
Sure. Well, that's what is going to be enjoyable, getting together. We're so busy with a family of eight and horses and St. Bernard dog and cats. And everything. Through the years, we were kind of busy.
Oh, yeah.
Now we have to slow down, and we have to talk about all those things.
Oh, I think it's great.
But I would like to get back to John O'Brien, because
of course,
there is a part of the story that has always kind of been interesting to me, and I think it will be to other people. I told about the prisoners in the camp that were allowed to have newspapers and all that. Now, but it was possible to escape from that Camp Ford.
But not easy.
But only those who were strong and healthy were able to attempt it. The area was very dense and tangled up with trees and brush and dangerous rivers to cross, as I understand it. When someone left, the Irishmen would try to distract the guards by singing loudly and dancing the Irish jig. And reading that brought tears to my eyes, knowing that even though they had little hope of survival, they were kind enough to help others. And that just is a beautiful thought to me.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So this was in Texas.
Yes.
And...
Well...
The prison
yeah,
was
this
Texas.
Was in Texas. And, that's right.
And were the old... There was more than just Irish
sure.
in prison.
Sure.
But they would dance the Irish jig, or was well, it just the Irish that was covering for the escapee?
Probably, but
or,
who knows?
Or this was just one group. You weren't there.
No.
But this was just one group, and you knew what they did
sure.
to cover for these.
Yes.
So it obviously wasn't a prison like today. It was a prisoner of war camp, is what it was.
Uh huh.
So it might have been guarded, but it didn't have 20-foot walls
right.
topped with razor wire.
Right.
It's possible to escape.
Sure.
But you're... I picture it, when you describe that, I picture that as the woods that they were, you know, they were fighting in the wilderness. I don't know. It's interesting to think about the Civil War and that stuff.
Well, I've been in touch in the last day or so.
You lived through World War II.
Sure.
Korea, Vietnam, yeah. Gulf War. How did you survive? I mean, look at the pandemic, the polio. I'll tell you one thing that I never, in my wildest imagination, the COVID pandemic,
mm-hmm.
I would never picture me living through that.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy how we're all experts now at that, something that we never dreamed we'd...
You just never know what's ahead. I remember the polio epidemic and how I could not leave my backyard and play with friends or anything in my... very best friend right across the street got bulbar polio, the very worst. And she had been swimming in Hoyt Pool, and I had not gone that day, fortunately. And she ended up paralyzed terribly from the waist down. And her mother had to work, and I would take her. When I think of this, I could never do that today. I would take her by bus all the way to a hospital that was more than an hour away, but we would stop at a drugstore and have a hot fudge sundae on the way.
Well, that makes it worth it.
Right. To this day, when something bad is going on, I reward myself with the hot fudge sundae. I mean, that was just a tradition to cheer you up.
Drugstore lunch counters.
Yeah.
And that's something I remember.
Sure.
Woolworths or something like that.
Right.
We had one here in Waukesha.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not familiar with bulbar, but you said it was the worst.
Mm-hmm.
I thought... being confined in an iron lung, that was the worst.
But yeah, that must have been,
bulbar,
yes.
You don't recover from that?
Well, she had to have a lot of surgeries. I remember a surgery on her sympathetic nerves, and she had a lot of surgeries. And one time I went with her to have a cast removed from her leg. And I was a very young kid. I just had never hardly been in a hospital, and scared when you smell that smell of a hospital and everything. And we go into this room where these doctors and nurses have masks on, and nobody explains anything to you or calms you down or say, oh, it's going to be okay or anything. We're going to make a lot of noise, but it's okay. They don't say any of that in those days. And she was hanging on to me for dear life like this. And all of a sudden, yes, and they started with that loud noise,
right.
sawing off the cast.
Right.
And I... I started turning white, like I'm going to pass out. And I said, Joan, I have to leave. And she said, what?
It was scaring you.
I was petrified. But I couldn't faint on top of her.
She had to go through it.
Well, yes. So it was.
Well, I guess, I mean, I'm blessed. I mean, I'm blessed that you're my mom.
Well, thank you.
But we're blessed that we didn't, that nothing bad happened to us.
Yeah.
All eight kids are still here, still alive, still healthy.
Yeah.
You drove here. Mm-hmm. You're 87 and you drove here.
In a Jeep Cherokee.
you were one of three siblings. Uh-huh. You have two brothers.
Two older brothers, yeah.
We probably don't have a lot of time, but what can you tell me about them, your brothers?
Well, my oldest brother, he was a Jesuit priest. He spoke many languages. So language, yes. He was very, very interesting. It's hard to describe him.
He taught at Creighton University.
Yeah. And he,
the entire time that I knew him.
Yes. And the most important thing he did was he founded something called SCOLA, S-C-O-L-A, Satellite Communication for Learning. And they would install cables under all the universities that would sign up for it and bring in satellite communication to many, many foreign countries, which he felt if people could just communicate with each other, we could get along better, I think was a basic premise of his work. And by learning the languages, and that was it, to learn language from those countries by hearing even the commercials and the programs from, you know, all countries I didn't even know existed. Long lists of many, many countries signed up for it.
Just the news programs. So the university, so they would subscribe to this service.
Yes.
And you'd be able to hear, you'd be able to listen or watch their program in that language.
Right, and learn the language.
If you're trying to learn a language, here's a channel that you can watch that has their language.
Right.
So,
yes, it was very beneficial. And it's, I believe it's still very active, and it's located in McClelland, Iowa.
And they had when we visited there. There was like a dish farm.
Oh
and,
yes.
And, you know, we went into the studio where they had all the monitors and stuff.
Uh-huh. Really cool. Very interesting.
But that was in probably the last big thing he was involved
yes.
in, but he was a sculptor in his teaching years.
He showed his sculpture. He displayed his enormous metal sculptures in New York. And they moved, some of the sculptures moved, and they were enormous.
Man. Kinetic. I remember as a kid, that was so cool. I think even way back before I was 5 years old, we had a robot sculptor in sculpture in the backyard. I remember there was a metal sculpture back there.
Yeah,
and it might have been of a man or something.
Yeah, like it was.
I'll tell you, this guy, he worked in metal.
Yeah,
he would pound these aluminum things and weld them so mm-hmm. that you'd have these enormous, like a, they call it the potato or something like that, big enough that you could actually live in or go in. They had couches and stuff.
Yeah, and he installed a lot of sculptures in waysides in Nebraska, I believe. I always heard that.
He went through all kinds of, and this is why I love Uncle Lee. He went through these phases where he would have fiberglass, huge, mm-hmm. colorful fiberglass yes. sculptures. And the ones that moved that you're talking about, mm-hmm. that fascinated me because uh-huh. we had, and I think you can see them, some sculptors today delve in that. But when mm-hmm. Uncle Lee did it, it was just so cool mm-hmm. to see these weird, you know, the found objects, he weld them together.
Yes.
And stuff.
If we have time, I just remembered something that was quite interesting, too. He did sets for plays and different events. And one time he did it for the Nutcracker and invited all eight of the kids and our whole family to take the train down to Omaha to see it. And after the play, we met this wonderful dancer, and I believe he was from the New York City Ballet, that had been in that one of my favorite musicals, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. He had a French name. It's a little hard to remember his name now. But before the play, a friend of my brother's, he was a 4-star general at SAC Air Force Base and wanted to show our children around this plane and describe everything on it. And I was so nervous that we'd be late for the play. I was a total wreck, but looking back, I thought, for that busy man to take time to show these children and try to, you know, explain.
And we were obviously well behaved.
Yes, of course.
Because we were great kids. But I want to say that whenever you took us to a restaurant, I mean, how many, you know, not everybody has 8 kids. But
no.
We would always get complimented. Oh, your yes. kids are so well behaved.
Right. Well, the best story about that is we took you all to Washington Island one time, our first trip to Door County, and we walked into Sunset Lodge where everybody had been doing these crossword puzzles for days and days and days, and they saw 8 kids coming in and they said to themselves, oh my gosh, what are we going to do now? And next thing I know, they have you sitting next to them, helping them with their puzzles, and they just loved it. They enjoyed having you around. So,
yeah, let's get back. You know, we only got a couple minutes left.
Or seconds.
Let's get back to one thing I want to touch on about Uncle Lee is he had Tom and I help him one summer, mm-hmm. and this was in his foundry stage. He would smash railroad axles
yes.
at the Union Pacific rail yard mm-hmm. and, you know, stretch them out and make sculptures. Oh,
right.
We poured some castings in the foundry. Mm-hmm. That was my first experience in a foundry. And now, years later, many, many years later, I'm working in a foundry.
Oh.
So I have to thank him for those memories. I probably still would be where I'm at uh-huh. without that, but I think of him constantly.
You're more comfortable.
Because he got, probably.
You work with precious minerals.
Hot stuff. Yeah, very precious minerals.
Yes.
Very precious minerals.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a stainless foundry, so, you know, it's very expensive stuff, but very
yes.
hot. Yeah. Well, I wanna obviously I love you like the moon to the moon and back.
Oh.
And I appreciate you doing this with me.
Well, you know? It's my pleasure.
You've done things for me my entire life, and here's another one that you agreed to. So
well, I'm your
much.
Mother, and that's what mothers
lot.
Do. I
this
just adore you and love you, too. And I thank you. And I thank everyone else to make this possible.
Agreed. Thank you, Kelly and Angela. I mean, not Angela.
Angelina.